Hey, folks. Tyler from Being This Person here. This is a round two episode with Elise. She's a person I met through the internet, long story short, and I'm so happy I did because she's one of the most bold, self-assessing, and passionate people I've met. And you'll hear that in our conversation. We feed off of each other. We enjoy each other's company, and it builds to much more of a conversation than an interview. And it's really fantastic. And it also shows in her music. There will be a link in the show notes to her website, Elise.com or EliseTyler.com. Super easy to find. I mean, it's her name. Also know that during the episode, we had some recording issues because, you know, distance recording and such. And so there's some hiccups in the beginning. There's a couple of hiccups in the middle, but those are more because we went on a break and came back and it was our own fault then. But it doesn't change the episode any. I think you'll still enjoy it just as much as I did. So at that point, folks, I would encourage you to subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. Yeah, I know it means nothing to you, but it really does help me out. It's free. It takes a couple of minutes on your side, but it helps me get exposure. And that's what this is all about. If I'm ever going to pay for my costs, it's probably going to be through that. So if you do that, that'd be awesome. I also have an email. It is beingthisperson@gmail.com. All being this person is lowercase letters, no spaces, spelled correctly, the whole bit. Yeah, I also have a website, beingthisperson.com. You can easily find me on Facebook at beingthisperson. And I have a Twitter. Twitter's where it gets a little hung up because it is kind of a personal Twitter. I use it for some things outside the show. It was essentially built for the show. So you get updates about this, but you also get a little bit of insight into me. It is @DonisTyler. So DonisTyler, capitalize the D and the T in those. And you should find me in the Twitterverse for however weird it is, pretty easily. I also have a Patreon. Patreon is a way that you can you can support people that are creators like me, And pretty easily. Like for me, you just go to patreon.com/beingthisperson. And I'll, for $1 a month, I'll send you a personalized thank you note on stationery and everything. Like, remember those old-fashioned letters? I'll do that. There are a couple other tiers. But if you want to do that, that'd be really great. Thank you to those of you who already do that. Thank you for listening, folks. And I appreciate you. Let's roll the theme music. First question again, and welcome back, is who are you?
Who am I? You'd think I would have had a chance to think about that question in the meantime and have a better answer for you. I am Elise Tyler. I'm really sensitive to that. You know, if I have any voice, like, how do I use it? And also knowing when you speak on the internet, you're speaking forever. You know, it's like, unless you go back and delete your posts, but if your intention is to just put it out there and leave it, then it's going to be held up years later. And, you know, did it stand the test of time?
For myself, I've missed, but I leave my things up because I think it shows a pattern of growth. Like it shows the place that I came from. It's brave.
Yeah,
I
super agree, but we're in cancel culture right now too.
Right.
And I have found myself so misunderstood so often when trying to communicate via internet, via social media, that I'm really careful now. As both me's, I'm very, very careful what I say. And I mean, I spent half an hour today trying to craft a Facebook message that I never posted. It even crossed my mind to ask you for help.
I've not been doing any better. I've been writing things in Google Docs before I copy paste them onto social media lately. Like, that's where I'm at.
Care, right? It takes being careful.
Especially when I'm trying to have a voice on some of the things that are really touchy to people right now. And, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And part of what I've been thinking, because I am, like, straight up, straight presenting white dude, right? Like, that's what I am. And so I don't have much space for voice.
Yeah.
I don't have much space for voice. But I think that what I found for me, and I was talking to somebody else about this on another one recently, is that my voice may be the place where I can talk to the people that can put up with straight presenting white dude. And maybe I can talk to them and be their first step. And so that is a really careful place to tread. You know? And that's why I've been putting so much focus, and it sounds like you're doing the same kind of thing, like putting tons of focus into how you're using your words and what they are.
Exactly.
It's a weird world. Weird world.
It got really weird this year. It had been leading up to it, but it really surpassed any.
Well,
and it had to be 2020, of course, like the year of clear vision and some
right. Yeah, maybe we'll find it.
I don't know. I hope so. I literally just this past, I don't know, months now. I don't know. I just zone out and go usually with music, but sometimes just talking. And I just try to let ideas flow. And I'm not trying to be seeking wisdom or anything, but I just feel like I know that right now demands a whole new level from all of us. This really is a lot. I mean, so many of us can see this really is
It's
a turning point period.
It's a turning point period. Like if we're either going to change or the next version of this is going to be fucking terrifying.
Oh, it's horrific. Like, what's
not, not that it isn't terrifying right now, but if
right?
change doesn't happen now, the next version.
No, boy. I'm trying not to be terrified. I'm really trying to just keep a calm, like, thank God I got exposed to so many, different ways of thinking over the past couple of years, and now have some ways to try to, you know, one of my heroes, I'll say his name and I'll get, you know, hammered for it by people like I always do. Jordan Peterson. I love Jordan Peterson. Okay. So, one thing he says is that he advises that you live with kind of the aim that you will be the strongest person at your father's funeral. You'll be that person who can really hold shit together, keep the right, you know, atmosphere. You've got it. You're the one that can be most counted on, and not to have some hero complex. Like, I want to be the one that everyone turns to, because that's fucking annoying and no one turns to that person.
or when they do, it's a very, very tired person at the end. Like, that happens too.
Yeah.
That happens too.
Right. Yes, totally. Well, yeah. Good observation.
Well, that's an intern. That's an insight. I tend to, in a lot of my community, be a little bit of a touchstone, and it can wear a person out when I forget to take time for myself. So that's where I know that from. But
yeah. Okay. So the idea is, and I saw this other thing, and I'm going to tie this together. I saw this thing about, it's called your second person. And have you heard of second person?
Go ahead. I've heard of a lot. This is not theater second person, so go for it. Yeah.
It's your idea. It's like a weird term for it. It's basically your ideal. So your second person, but you try to make your second person very concrete. And your second person is actually, it's you as you'd want to be, and it's modeled after people you admire, and in studying them, like, what did they do? How did they approach these kinds of situations? You know, like, pulling together from these people that you consider to be great, people you would like to emulate, like condensing that into you. And what, so then what does that mean for you? That's your second person. And one of the things, like, it can feel really daunting, right? Because you're talking about these great people.
It's building the ideal self is what it sounds like.
It's building the ideal self. And so it can feel really daunting, like, oh my gosh, me compared to like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or, you know, pitting yourself against heroes. But it's a very wonderful, humbling exercise, to be sure.
Yes, it is.
And part of that humbling was, I don't know if it's like a quote that's, I'll send you the link to this one YouTube video that goes into it.
Yeah, because you can't write in my notebook like the last time.
Right. That's awesome. So that YouTube video, I'll send you the link. But he quotes this quote. Let me see if I can get it. Oh, you know, I don't think I can say it as a quote. I think I just have to tell it as the idea that if you are not a great human, you know, like if you're not blessed to be Newton or Einstein or whoever, who just like really just shook the boat, rocked us with their novel ideas. That's such a rarity, a novel idea. Like, those people can take aim and let loose the arrow and hit the target, and they're good, right? Regular people, if we want to hit such a mark, all we can do is compensate by aiming really high.
Okay. So it's the shoot for the stars theory.
I guess it is. I guess it's that simple. Wish upon a star.
You know, shoot for the stars and maybe you'll hit something, kind of thing. Or as my mother used to say, you know, if you try enough things, Tyler, one of them is going to be right.
Yeah.
Like, just don't quit trying things. Eventually.
And the ones that weren't, you're going to learn from. It's not like you're starting from zero every time you start something new.
Right.
Look at what you learned. And we are blessed to have information at our fingertips, literally.
Yes.
That's an advantage.
It is an advantage. So this is a good, I'm going to take us now, before we go back into talking about society and culture in the world right now, and take this uptick for the next question, which is, can you define happy or happiness?
Wow. Now you make me think about the difference between those two words. Happy is a way that I feel, or it's a wish for somebody, and happiness is the state of feeling happy. And now what's the question about happy or happiness?
Can you define happy or happiness?
Okay. Yeah, that's a really great question. The things that I think that I've learned about happiness is that it literally is always right beside you. And I've had a privileged enough life that I can see how that's pretty much always been true. You know, I may have had some very, very dire moments where I was just, you're not going to be happy in every moment. You shouldn't think that you're going to be happy in every moment. But to step into that mind frame, you can practice, I guess I should say. You can practice stepping into that mind frame of knowing that happiness is right beside you. Actually, now it's so funny, it just occurs to me. Before this call, I was downstairs thinking literally about happiness. But it wasn't, it was like a component of the overall thought, and but a very central one. And I was thinking about how, what if we are so focused right now, us being those of us who care about our country and, you know, like preserving freedom.
And the people in it, and yeah. Not living under tyrannical reign, and yeah, some things like that. The little things.
The less quantifiable goodies. Yeah, but like, what if I'm letting myself be so terrified because I really do let myself slip into terror where I have my coping mechanisms. It involves my guitar and singing the same thing over and over and over again. But what if I'm so focused on this fear of this most horrific outcome? And then I extrapolated that to other things that I am terrified of. And
can you give an example?
Yeah. Yeah, like outcomes in life. Like I stay single for the rest of my life. Damn it. I had my one chance. Turned out to be
not what you were thinking it was going to be.
I was a prey, and great. That was my one chance at having a like romantic relationship. Like I really have to get to a place where I'm okay with that. And if I'm in anything, like, cause I don't know when I'm going to have my fucking limbs cut off or whatever. I don't know how long I have anything. And as long as I'm not noticing that I don't not have them, then I'm not noticing that I have them.
Okay. So it sounds like you're trying to spend more time focusing on the things that you do have and reminding yourself of the joy that can bring you and that you deserve from them. Or
do this interview in just words. I could be like gratitude.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So happiness, gratitude. Yeah. So if that's what you're after, but there's another thing about happiness that we live in this country that's like, one of our founding lines is the pursuit of happiness. And I find that so aggravating because on the one hand, it's right fucking next to you.
You know, right? That's how that line wasn't originally written, right?
Yes. My daughter told me that recently, okay. But that's how we all think it.
That's how it's learned now and how it's written now, but that's not how it was originally written.
And when I found out that it was actually edited, it made it so much more sinister.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm nothing if not an admitted and self-proclaimed dyed-in-the-wool capitalist. But capitalism as we see it right now is nothing like actual capitalism.
Right.
So take all that as one will. But it was one of those things I learned along that line of figuring out, that's the dirty side of it. But I do like that it's been transferred to the pursuit of happiness, because I think it opens up for other people. Because, as I've heard a lot and understand and want to encourage other people to understand, one person's happiness is not another person's happiness. So right. Opening it up to just the blanket, the pursuit of happiness, is much better than the original writing, I have to say. But
so what was the original?
Pursuit of wealth.
The original pursuit of wealth?
If I remember correctly, it was life, liberty, and the pursuit of wealth.
Oh, man, I didn't remember. I knew my daughter had straightened me out as far as, like, I had never known that, and then she told me.
Yeah, I'm sitting in front of a computer. I could look it up, but I'm not gonna. I think it was life, liberty, and the pursuit of wealth.
Notes.
It won't matter in 30 minutes. We'll be talking about something else.
Yeah, but it will matter in the show notes. Okay, so happiness. So pursuit of happiness, it's right next to you. So if you think you're pursuing it, you literally, that you could not more ensure that you don't get to it by framing it in terms of it's something I have to pursue. You could not more guarantee that you will not make it if you think that's how you'd make it. So I just find it so, so sinister for that. And I don't know that it was, it's just when I hear that it was changed, but changed from wealth to happiness, that now I don't know if they meant it, if it was like quite the plot that I imagine it to have been.
It was a different time. There was a lot of poverty, you know, and like taxation without representation was a thing, things like that.
Yeah.
Not, just but that is nothing now, but.
Don't even imagine that you're going to get wealth. Like, forget it. Well, no, just be happy. Just figure out how to be happy.
Well, I like how you put it, as happiness is more a partner walking next to you that you can turn to and have right there. And if you're trying to chase it, they're just like happiness. Your partner is just trying to keep up with you. I think that's a really beautiful thing to say. And something a lot of people don't necessarily realize, that it is so much more attainable. It just, like, slow down would be a good start.
So the second part of that is, why do you want to be happy? And that's just baked into the cake with the pursuit of happiness. Like, duh, of course you want to be happy. Like, why would you pursue something you don't want? So it's just this understanding that that's what we want, is to be happy. But there are many times it would be insane to be happy.
When you're being the strongest person at your father's funeral, being an example of one of them.
Or that would be weird. Be like insanely happy at your dad's funeral. Yeah, that's not going to work.
I know of a couple of people who have particular relationships that could explore that arena. I'm not one of them. But.
Yeah, it's a unique situation for sure. For sure. Unique dads. But yeah, and like right now might not be a time to be happy. It really might not. It might not make a lot of sense. I got off of dating apps. Okay, you can.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mine have all decided I'm not paying attention. So there's that going on at least. I'm not technically off them, but I'm also not participating. So I've gotten that far.
I'm trying to remind you that there's like a whole dating world out there.
What would you do with a date right now anyhow, right?
I know. It would have to be something pretty unique. So, but part of why I got off of it, you know, so many reasons, way too many reasons to even start. But one of the reasons that I got off was when you meet somebody, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to smile. You're supposed to say, hey, it's, you know, how's it going? It's going great. You're supposed to be happy.
You're really supposed to appear happy, but yeah, I see where you are.
Yeah. And I'm like, dudes, right now, I don't see happy as being too much in the equation. If you ask me how I'm doing and I say, well, you know, should be pretty plain what I'm getting at. And I just couldn't, I could not deal with trying to be happy on dating apps when the world is crumbling. And I was finding myself like actually getting in social media style fights on dating apps. And I'm like, yeah, this has got to end.
I have a comedian friend that's been on a couple of times that was using her dating apps for material. And what she would do is she actually had a file of, she called it poorly courted date lines or something like that. But she'd literally screen capture the conversation.
I have
and
thought
she'd
of
like,
it, man.
And like everyone, every single one I read, I was like, oh, you poor, poor women. Like, that is unbelievable. Like, gay guys don't say that to gay guys. I didn't think straight guys said that to women. Clearly, I'm in the closet.
I don't know what other women are getting, but if you saw my dating profile, like, I have to imagine it's really somewhat atypical. I mean, just kind of basing it, I don't see other girls' profiles. I see what other guys' profiles are. And then I think, well, okay, what kind of...
You register as bi, and then you get to see them both.
Oh, is that the...
Pro tip.
I just have to tell a little lie. I just have to start my entire potential future soulmate on a little lie.
Yeah.
Oh, I can... Oh, yeah, no problem. And yet...
It's like job interviews. You don't have to. Oh, hello, puppies. Nice.
There's Ozzy.
Nice.
I've decided to imagine myself as his aunt. I feel like I could be more benevolent to him that way.
That's an interesting approach. Yeah. I don't know. Mine's behind me. He was throwing bones around the living room as he started just because he likes to make noise during podcasts. But now he's chilled out until somebody walks by with a radio on. Then we're in trouble. Then we got barking for 3 minutes.
Is that likely to happen?
Yeah, I live on a very busy street.
Okay.
I mean, granted, that has been one of the blessings of COVID is that it's a much less busy street than it used to be, but it's still a very busy street. Yeah. Like my recording studio is at the back of the house, not in the front of the house where I'm sitting.
All right, we can just keep talking. I'm just going to let you know that I have to move because my Mac doesn't have a very good battery. And so it's telling me that it's almost out of power already. It was plugged in until the moment that I pulled it out.
Yeah, they have a tendency to do that.
It's getting old. I probably have to get a new one, but I just can't bear it. I really can't.
I swear by mine. The one in front of me is, I'm not going to admit how old because it will scare it out of existence. But suffice to say, I've gotten a few phones since the computer, so I absolutely understand.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's one way to put it, for sure. That paints the picture.
Yeah. And the Mac next to it is even older. The Mac next to it is a monitor and a CPU are separate units. That's how old the other Mac is, so...
That's what I'm working on with my recording, and lately it's getting to... getting so frustrating.
Yeah, I really only use it because it has my high-end graphics programs on it, which are
expensive. I think I need a faster computer to honestly run the program without crashing constantly.
That's where I'm at, and that's why the reason I keep the old computer is to run the programs that I can't afford to replace. But at the same time, I end up gridlocked on the old computer because the fancy programs are too much for the old computer. And yeah. And then you're into like a new computer and $1,000 in software. And it's just, I feel you.
Yeah, it's a racket. It's such a racket. Like, yep. I'm sure they could make them compatible, but whatever. Anyway, I won't.
No, they can't do that with a PlayStation. They're not going to do it with a Macintosh. So, you know, I just buy new Macs every once in a while. I have since they were tan and the screens were green and white. So that's how long I've been there. But enough talk about how much I owe my soul to Steve Jobs.
Exactly. I don't want to. You employ adult workers. Living wages and fair fucking conditions, and maybe I'll spend thousands of dollars on your stupid products.
Yep.
Ah!
But same time, like I said, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Apple person, so...
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter.
It's good, yeah. If I went and bought a Dell or something else, it's the same...
To live in society, you must buy into modern-day slavery.
Yeah.
Period.
And so that's... That is not happy.
No.
Again, leading us into this, it's really difficult to be happy.
Is something happy?
Yeah, well.
You're going to talk about happy, and look where I take it. This most child slavery.
I told you I'd steer us back on the course if I saw us going awry. So, I do. Let's lead into the next question, though, so I don't keep you all night. Which is, honestly, this series of questions is pretty awkward in this day and age. But it's this series of questions, so this is what we get to do. What can you do to help others be happy?
Can I change the question just a teeny bit? Is that allowed?
Totally. I totally edited it from the way I originally wrote it already. So yeah, totally.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, originally I wrote it. I asked, "What can you do to make others happy?" And I figured that's just a downright untruth. Yeah. Like that's a ridiculous thing to ask of somebody. So right. I'm a magic lollipop.
And it would be wonderful.
Yeah. So that was ridiculous. So I changed it. How would you like to edit the question?
Oh, well, I mean, is happiness the goal? Like, I don't necessarily need to. There was a Monty Python skit about the Happy Kingdom. Did you see that?
Yes, I have, but because I've seen the entire Python catalog throughout my life,
yeah,
I don't remember all of them.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so my kids loved it. It's a kingdom where you're not allowed to be unhappy. You must be happy always.
Yes.
At appropriate and inappropriate times. So like, if your wife had just left you on the same week that your father died, you must be happy.
I do remember this.
Yeah. So, yeah. So what can I do to help others find, I just feel like happiness wouldn't be necessarily the word I would want to give, but I think like what is a kind of a reliable source of the feelings that are at least similar to happiness and the sort of, you know, positive endorphin response that they give us. And I think one of the big ones is, agency. Mm. And, you know, we talked about empowerment for a really long time, and I think we still probably do talk a little bit about empowerment, but it's kind of an old word at this point.
It is.
But agency may go, you know, it may be like the next step on that conversation where it's not that I've literally always had this problem with the word empowerment. Like, wait, but you're saying that I'm giving you power? Like, doesn't that assume that I have power to start with and I'm like giving it to you somehow? It always felt a little wrong. Whereas agency is more just like that you have this intrinsic agency. And and I feel like we can tap into that from so many different perspectives. Like I started to say that and my mind immediately went to the biblical angle of that.
Okay. Well, may I bounce a question in here?
Yeah.
It relates to what we talked about the last time and is also something I wrote down. So how does agency come into your, because last time we talked about free will and how you don't necessarily subscribe to free will.
Wait, is that where I was at that time in our conversation? I wasn't around on free will yet?
That's where you were. you had some moments during that conversation.
I was.
You started asking some questions.
Yeah, that was.
Okay, so
that was a really intense time.
Yeah, you were going through stuff. Not that we aren't going through stuff now, also.
Right,
but
yeah.
It was different stuff then.
It was more internal stuff. Now it's more external stuff, which calls on a new internal.
Yeah. So okay, maybe this answers my question a little bit. So how does agency work in your belief on free will and or not free will?
See, I knew we were going to have a nice time talking. You asked me questions like that. Yeah, that's a really great question. So yeah, I think that's just, I think it's as simple as a shift. And the loss of the idea of free will was really fundamentally, I think, rooted in a very materialistic view of the universe. And and I had already like long ago stopped pondering certain things and had just taken them as these things are unknowable. No further pondering necessary.
That is a real release when you can come to terms with something like that. I will agree.
And so those things I had like just stopped thinking about for such a long time, like, well, it's fine. I can deal with there not being a God and it doesn't bother me. You know, I can deal with dying. It doesn't bother me. I mean, yeah, of course there's the part of you that despairs at the unknown. How could you not be human and have fear of the unknown? That's so, it's totally natural, but it wasn't like an obsessive sort of like, I must find resolution to this or I can't continue my life in, you know, on a positive course without this answer. It's fine. Like I will die. The older I get, the more comfortable I get with that whole notion anyway.
That's what my elders tell me too.
Yeah.
And like the older I get, the more I tell it to my kid.
It's so true. I know. That's like the best thing I can tell my kid when she's worried about dying. I'm like, honey, I'm just not.
We're all gonna.
You know,
it's just, that's the way it is.
It just happens. Just something that happens. Yeah, I mean, I remember being a kid and being that was so scary when you're a kid. And you couldn't, I mean, you couldn't believe that you'd really become comfortable with it. And I'm not exactly, you know, still, of course, there's still the fear of the unknown. I mean, it's not 100%. But anyway, so I had written off these certain things, which left me in a very materialistic worldview. And I was just like, there. I mean, I imagine myself, like, my thoughts on anything metaphysical, just like, washing in on the tide gently and leaving a little layer of sand, which builds up over the years. And then it like compacts and condenses with the weight of gravity into stone. That's the level of intellectual, like inquiry I was giving to anything metaphysical. And so when the attack on free will came, there was nothing.
Your personal attack on free will, or?
No.
Those are interesting words. Yeah.
I was challenged on the existence of free will. I believed in free will most of my life. But there came a challenge to free will.
Okay.
In the medium of an actual argument, a human being making this argument against free will. And I didn't have anything to defend against it with. I was like, yep, looks like you're right. Fuck, that sucks. I was so disappointed. I wrote several songs and like despairing of this loss in my life of free will. oh my goodness.
Well, I think... To argue, to play devil's advocate a little bit, but also to express a little bit of what I think. I as we discussed last time, because you weren't in a free will kind of world, I was totally in a free will world. But I can have I still live in a totally, like, free will is a super thing.
Okay.
But I have a caveat that there is something that speaks to not necessarily free will. An example that came into my life recently is somebody that I know, I will call a family member, but it's not a genetic family member. Like, if you chase my tree, you're not going to find them. But a family member had been trying to have a child. And finally, I got pregnant, right? Everything was going swimmingly because, I mean, there were a lot of issues involved when you try that hard to have a child. There's things going on, like science-y things.
For sure.
Yeah, and it had finally worked out. Well, child decided it was ready when it was half term. 1.6 ounce baby comes into this planet.
Jeez!
The tiniest, like...
Dang! Oh,
bread loaf-sized child.
I was in NICU with after my first child was born. We were in NICU for 2 weeks, so I actually have very close encounters with children of that size while I was hoping my child would survive.
Child is still in NICU, is up to almost 3 pounds.
Seriously?
Yeah, child's still in NICU, is almost 3 pounds, so everything's going well. Wow. But have a child in NICU and try and find a way to get tested every day for COVID so you can go see your fucking child.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's a screwed up world. So all of that threw in a question like, these people tried so hard using all the free will they had to get to this place.
Mm.
And like, there are circumstances that the universe just says, I don't care how hard you tried, this is what you get.
Yeah.
And I think that removes some piece of free will. Like, what you do with that is still where your free will exists. But...
By the way, how does that remove some piece of free will, though?
You've done everything within your personal power to not have that situation.
Yes.
And that situation still happens. That's determinist.
Okay, but that's a way...
Arguably determinist.
I hear what you're saying, but to me it's a way different thing because free will comes down to my actual ability in any given nanosecond to make a decision. Like, do I take a drink from my glass now or do I wait a little while? Maybe I should pace myself. Like,
I have a memory.
So, yeah, so free will is the notion that I have any say in when I take a drink.
Okay, and by that definition, I absolutely wholeheartedly still agree. And I still think that free will is a big thing and does totally exist. I just, there are situations that seem kind of determined.
I think free will exists. I do. I'm back to thinking it exists. Hooray for me. I'm really happy about
that. Welcome back to this side of the fence.
Thank you. It feels good. It feels good to think I have some choice in the matter. But how much of what I do is free will? There, I'm going to say there's a way skewed view of how much a person's moment-to-moment actions are really a conscious free will decision as opposed to a pilot program operating in the back of your mind based on generations of conditioning and programming and training. There is so much of that that I think free will may be as rare as an original thought. Okay, I still think we have it, but I think that it requires. So I just did that just to see if you'd go ooh. And
you'd go, ooh. I took that hook, line, and sinker.
No, I don't really mean it that. I don't mean it that extreme. You know what? It's way more common than that. Let's say that actual exertion of free will occurs as often as consumption of a pear at the perfect moment.
Okay. You can pay a lot for a good pair, though. but that aside,
get a really good one. You're right. No, it's more frequent than that.
You're kind of making an argument for. It takes someone who is very aware of who they want to be and searching for that, how did we say earlier in the conversation, that ideal self to use their free will instead of to use their years of genetic and societal training to move on that, you know, that program muscle memory, if you will.
Exactly.
It sounds like that's the argument you're making.
It's exactly that. And when you think that you are operating on free will, okay, you might be, you know, you might be. And, or there might at least be some aspect of free will in that decision that you made. But just chances are, like, that programming is so deep, and just being aware of it doesn't immunize you from being led by it. You don't take up the reins just because you learned that all this time you've been played and you're ally is your enemy, and now you know exactly what to do just because this discovery has come to you.
There's a good scientific argument that can be made and has been made by people who are much more learned than me, that to some extent is genetic and what it takes to be a human being right now.
Wait, what is genetic? Free will? What's free will?
Our program decision making.
Okay, yeah.
The thing you fall back on when you're not using your free will, when writing in your analogy. That because what it took to be a human who could survive on this planet over the couple millennia that we've been here is very different from what it takes to be a human on this planet now. And by nature of what humans have lived through becoming the society-based animal that we are now, I see this equated more to men than women, but not always. But one of the reasons, I'll use a feminine example just to try and meet my Bechdel test, is that women generally have better and more acute vision. And there is scientific thought that that comes because they were traditionally more the gatherers and they had to be able to more quickly identify a small plant or something like that.
The man
tended to have a larger muscular bone structure. That's because he was running down an animal.
I've heard that same explanation for a different strength of women, but that's cool. Yeah. So eyesight. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's a strength there that men have less of. Like my vision is horrible. I can see the screen. That's why my glasses are off. If I had to see across the room, I'd have to wear them. there is an argument to be made that some of this fallback isn't just physical attributes like good vision or what have you, that there are programs in our heads that have come genetically too.
Ah, wow.
And maybe that's where some of our autopilot, as you so succinctly put it, comes from.
Yeah.
That's a lot, and I just talked divergently.
No, I'm glad you said all that. You know, it's just, sorry. You were saying all of this, and I'm to be stupid, goofy, honest, I just feel so blessed that I'm able to have conversations like this. It just like hit me in this moment of like, oh my goodness, I get to say this, and then somebody else says this back to me. That's so cool.
For the record, that's why I have a podcast, because I hate talking about the fucking weather. Like, I want to talk about fun, serious shit. Let's do it.
I'm so glad you found me through whatever.
The internet.
Yeah. Okay. So on that, right. There's so much we don't know. It's very exciting in a way to think about how much we don't know. And I think that awareness does let me go back to beliefs that I once held that I let go of reluctantly, but obligingly because the evidence proved it. okay, there's no free will. And then I can go back to it without exactly having proved free will, but with just this awareness of, okay, so this is kind of the other side. I lived no free will for probably 4 years.
Hmm. Well, people have to have experiences, so.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I hope it didn't sound like I was complaining. No.
No. I had a moment of kind of feeling sorry for you.
Oh, really?
And I didn't know what to do with that emotion, so I had to open my dumb mouth, and so that's
so
what happened.
Funny. That is so funny. You know, I used to get that a lot actually when I was in the depths of my like traumatic recovery, and people would often put on me how they would feel in that situation, and then they were responding to how they imagined they might have felt in that situation as opposed to how I'm actually feeling. Or like they give me the words that they might have needed to hear, but it's not really the words that help me at all or help me feel heard. Not to be critical of people.
I understood my misstep. That's part of why I explained what I was doing. But
oh yeah, I hope I'm not harping on it either. So
no,
where
no,
were
no.
we?
Oh, I don't know. We were long ago. We had started trying to figure out how to help others be happy. But it sounds like giving them agency was your first thing. Yeah.
The deafness of a politician. Look at how clever I am. Not talking about passionate affairs in the middle of a podcast.
No, like I said, again, getting off topic is encouraged, not just okay. It is encouraged.
All right. So, but I had brought up for a reason that it was 4 years that I lived thinking that there wasn't free will, which meant that, and I didn't question it for that 4 years, you know, I guess maybe for the first, I think it was, I'm totally guessing on the dates here, but I'm going to say like first 2 or 3 years of not thinking of losing my faith and my belief in free will for that first period of time, I didn't question it too much because I just had accepted it. I was like, dang it. Okay. And so then I lived that way for like 3 years, and then things changed where I did start to question like other things. And that led me back around to being like, oh, I do think we have agency. I do see how we have agency. I even see, and this is bizarre to me, I would never have believed this if you told 5 years ago me that today me was going to say this. I'd be like, fuck you. This is not going to happen. But yeah, not only do I believe we have agency, but there's a part of me that holds open the very real possibility that we can petition God. That's a really new thought for me, because I mean, I haven't had that thought since I was like literally a junior in high school.
So, again, because of your choice of words, petition God are the words that struck me. Do you mean, because I know you come from a relatively religious background, do you mean through the right. method of prayer? Or do you mean through...
I don't think I
have. Oh, through manifestation and building a vision versions and whatever, like that generally refers to the universeness more than God, but whatever name you want to put on universe or God,
it's very wide open. I think that the important part of that though is I think when you get into like the option that you proposed, which is I think perfectly valid, but the danger of putting it that way as opposed to how I put it is that I think that I'd like to see the person who gets rid of God and doesn't replace God with something. I'd really be curious to talk to somebody who believes that they don't believe in God and they also didn't replace God with something. I listen to a lot of Sam Harris, and I can't really say.
I was going to say, do you not know of any dyed-in-the-wool atheist? Because I mean,
yeah, no. Sam Harris, I think, is a great example because he ends up meditating. He ends up having a belief in some sort of metaphysical thing, and I that was something that for him was a progression. He entered the public realm in a certain place, and he actually did allow himself to grow under public eye into. As far as I see it, when he first came out, when I first became aware of him, I didn't see him as a meditating sort of in touch with a metaphysical realm sort of guy.
Right. He was much more Christopher Hitchens at the time.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Richard Dawkins. And Richard Dawkins was my, yeah. I mean, I took him on conferences. Yeah, and I was, before our call, I was actually thinking about how literally, specifically this, today before our call, I was thinking about how Richard Dawkins, I'm going to say let me down, but let me patch that up really fast. Let me down as far as I became aware that he too has flaws. He too is human. He too is short-sighted. He too is missing part of the picture. You know, like no human being can have all of the picture.
And I believe that is particularly a strong trait in anyone that works so stringently within a philosophy. So not that he's necessarily a philosopher, but he's very monofocal. But like any philosopher, like Kant missed a whole bunch of shit because he was so into what he was in. And Nietzsche had a great bunch of shit to say, but also was kind of off in this area, you know?
Meaning about women? Oh my
God. Yeah, right.
Like stroke his head and say, there.
It's okay. Freud will explain it to you in a couple hundred years. It's going to be okay, buddy.
He's fine. Nerds are totally in for like 200 years. You are like, you would be swarmed in women, Nietzsche. Don't worry.
Yeah.
All over now.
He wouldn't have no idea what they look like because he went blind writing with a pencil this long by candlelight. But yeah, I think those are examples. But and you can find that with anyone who is a philosopher, so to speak, is that they become so focused in one thing that they end up losing some of their humanity and the rest of it. And people that can grow into it, do a Ram Dass, or if you will, into growing into a more spiritual individual, like that's. That seems to be, in my opinion, a better, safer path. I don't know. Maybe that's why you don't run into that many people who have not replaced God with anything at all. Why there is nobody with just, here's the world. And
I mean, I think that our post-God experiment is so young for us to feel so confident in our approach to it. And I hold myself among the guilty there, you know? I mean, I was atheist, and then I was even don't believe in free will. I mean, I was all the way materialist. All the way. You couldn't get really much more materialist, you know? I mean, I was still a liberal, and, like, I had all my feelings and passions for humanity, but maybe that's a great way that we get tied back in with it, is recognizing that, okay, feelings are a thing that clearly exists. You could not deny that you're scared right now if you're scared in a moment. Like,
You can't deny that you were frightened. You can't deny that you were happy. You can't deny that you had these feelings. Where is the feeling? Where does that exist? Okay, we're going to try to boil it down to the the hormones. Okay, yeah. Feelings
it's
are
just hormones. The hormones. And this little slice of your brain.
And I'm just confusing myself. Oh, I'm just so bored. Yeah.
This weird gelatinous piece of my brain is receiving some hormones, and that's where all of these emotions and feelings come from.
Yeah.
It's hard to accept that. It's very hard to accept that as the end truth.
And so I think that's why I brought up that I lived with that for so long, that I lived with that absence of free will for so long, because when you really explore something to there are beyond limits to, I mean, when you adopt something as your framework for understanding the universe, it's like, there are no limits on a thing like that.
As defined by the universe scientifically. Yes.
So you, like, if you're ever going to see something in a well-rounded way, that's how you're going to do it, is by believing it, by literally, like, with your whole essence, this is what you believe to be true. This is what you, like, built your world on, is these assumptions. So in this case, my assumption that there is no free will, built my world on that. and so you end up by full on embracing this idea, you end up seeing its limits. Because when you explore it as fully as you can explore it, with as much investment as you can, like, this is how I live my life. So this is the rubric I use when I am faced with a so-called decision, because of course it's not an actual decision. But this is the rubric I use. This is how I make my decisions. This is how I approach my whole life. And so then when you commit to that level, I mean, I think unless it's a perfect system, unless you actually have stumbled upon the right answer, when that's what you live by, you will eventually come across its limits. You will encounter them at some point.
I certainly hope that's true.
Well, no, there's a whole part of that where you have to actually be really, really engaged in life still. Like, you can be engaged in life and playing by incorrect rules a little bit. But if you're still engaged, you're going to figure out eventually where those rules weren't right.
My statement still stands. I certainly hope that's true. I believe that people will eventually, if they are engaged and aware as individuals and in what they're doing, like fully in it, then they will come across hurdles and walls and hedgerows that they need to figure out what to do with to alter their awareness and their place in the world and that space that they're living in. I believe that. Mm. I unfortunately have questioned whether I have doubts about humans having awareness. I have doubts about humans having awareness.
Very reasonable.
Like, I can see it at the grocery store in this day and age. Like, there's giant arrows on the floor and you're not aware of that. Like, how are you even aware of who you are as a self or a being if you can't pay attention to that?
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, I want it to be true that people will challenge their boundaries.
Oh, there's so much there. I feel like that in itself has sparked what could be in itself a whole hour-long conversation
I
really want to have, to be honest with you.
On that note, I'm going to move you on because we are almost an hour already. To the rest of these programmed questions, I've got all the time in the world, as we discussed before we started recording right now. Who knows? I'm around for these conversations, not the weather.
Well, and you said bathroom breaks are allowed. So
bathroom breaks are allowed. You want one?
I don't know that I have such an excuse. I want to hear your next question first. Maybe I'll take the bathroom break after I hear your question, so I have a chance to reflect on it.
And then I get to restate it? Okay, yeah, I'll do that. I know how this works. It's a good one, actually, to take a break on.
Okay.
The question is, will you tell me about a happy memory?
Oh, that is a really good one to take a break on.
Yep.
That's the thing. Okay. All right, yeah. Let's take a break. I'll come back. Ask me the question again.
Perfect.
All right. So you just said that having these conversations where you can actually have an authentic connection with a human being, try to work out to the best of your ability how you're seeing things. And yeah. Okay. So having these conversations for you makes you happy.
Absolutely. And you responded to that with makes you hopeful, which I also will agree.
Yeah, because that's right. Because that's what it is for me when I have conversations with people and there's an actual connection, it does. It makes you feel hopeful. So then that gets to what are the underlying, I think happy is like, not to be cliche, but tip of the iceberg, you know? And so what's the underlying things to happy? That's where I talked about agency, is to feel like I actually have agency. What I decide to do with my life matters. And I feel like that's one thing I proved to myself without a doubt. I don't think I'm going to be going back on that one. I really think that what I do with my life matters. You'd have a hard time talking me out of that one.
And frankly, that one's real easy to prove. Because if you choose to take up heroin as your main hobby, you can prove that your choices have affected your life.
My community. What have I thrown away in terms of potential?
Exactly. They are very easy to prove. Much easier to prove on the negative side than on the positive side. But just because you can prove one kind of means the other exists.
Good for you. That should be your like... your sign that you did okay is you didn't wreak a shitload of havoc on your fellow human being. You did all right.
That's a pretty good plan and one that I try and live by. If I can uptick it just a little bit and try and improve things while I'm moving through, not causing problems.
Now, be careful trying to fix things.
Somebody said something, and I'm going to paraphrase. But it's very similar to this. Most mistakes are made while trying to improve things. You know, it just causes more problems. I've got a Terrence McKenna quote right here on my desk that's very similar to it. Language has made us more than pack hunting monkeys. It has made us pack hunting monkeys with a dream. And that's a quote I wrote down. So that's an actual quote.
That is excellent. Oh, that's a good one. Show notes.
Little did I know that I was going to have that sitting in front of me for this occasion, but.
Oh, that is, that's perfect. Okay, so trying to get down to the roots of what actually makes you happy. Having agency is a thing that makes you happy. Having hope is a thing that makes you happy. And so maybe if you're really having a hard time seeing that happiness is right beside you, maybe that's the issue, is that you haven't really thought about what things make you happy. Like, how do you just step into the, it's just like stepping into it. How do you just choose to step into it? Especially, I mean, it's not like I can choose to step into it whenever I want to. I certainly have periods where I'm super depressed and I don't fucking want to step into it. I could care less about stepping into happiness. I'm hurt, I'm pissed, I'm disappointed. I feel trapped in life. And no, I don't really feel like stepping into it at that moment. But if you do want to step into it, how do you do that? And maybe part of it is recognizing, okay, well, what sorts of things are true in this happiness version that I could just slide into, you know, like, what's true? Well, I have hope. Okay. Well, then how do I have hope? having this conversation. So good for you. You're doing it.
It's a silly hobby, but it's a good one, and it's gotten me through. It's given me opportunities for lots of growth. So that's cool, and I hope it does that for other people too. But if you remember, I asked you a question before we went on break. You have done a very classic Elise thing and dodged the entire thing.
I'm not trying to stall at all. Huh? What are we on time, though? Do we need to go?
Well, we've been recording for like an hour and 10 now.
Okay, so
I do have something to get up for to tomorrow morning, but it's still, I got hours, so.
So you got room that we could record a little bit more and you won't be too pressed about what to send.
I would be happy to have the conversation and the content. So I'll be happy in two arenas on that. How's that?
That's a lot of happiness.
Not bad.
Is this moment appropriate for so much happiness?
Well, it's appropriate to bring about moments like this in the times that we're in. Like, right? We got to remember that this can happen too. That you can have just silly giggles.
What you said was a little materialist, and I don't know if you would even see it that way.
Which last thing I said?
let's see. I'm trying to go back here. Hold on a second. Since I know we have time and you can just chop it from the chopping block.
Or not.
Or catch the weird
office. My other podcast, we did 2 hours and 40 minutes talking about the Yes catalog. Like, seriously?
Okay. Well,
three white guys talking about Yes for almost 3 hours. There's nothing good that can come out of that. But anyway.
Okay, let's say the last thing you said. Let's get back into the train of thought here.
The question I asked before we went on break?
Oh, no, not that question. I mean, yes. That question. I could just answer that question. Let me answer your question. Stop stalling. Okay. The last time I felt really happy, really super happy. Oh, my gosh, there's so many times, and they're really recent, but I'm going to go for, like, the closest kind of super peak, which was, yes, 2 days ago.
Oh.
It was three days ago. When I went to visit my daughter's garden, and the plants were not all dead.
Oh.
So about a day before that, I had gone to visit my daughter's garden, and the plants definitely looked dead.
Did you not notice that summer hit? Like, have you not been outside?
Man, they are baking in the afternoon sun, and I'm like, crap, I failed to water these. They went to their dads, and what kind of mother am I if I, like, let my daughter's garden die while she's gone?
It's not like you can go buy a replacement cucumber plant like you can a goldfish.
Right. I mean, I did think about pedaling on my bike to the store and see if they still had any of these plants left in their, like, discount rack. But luckily it didn't come to that because I had a moment of genuine happiness when I went to the garden and the water that I had given them the day before had resuscitated them. They were on the rebound. The day that I watered them, when they very much seemed dead, I honestly prayed to them. I directly to them, not to God on behalf of them, but to the plants themselves. And I'm like, darling, babies, if you pull through from this amount of neglect from me, I promise not to neglect you ever again. I promise. Promise. And I really didn't believe it was going to happen. I was like, oh. I just let these guys go. They're gone. This sucks.
You know that praying to plants is step one in that book that was really popular and got made into a movie that I can't remember the name of right now. But there's like 11 steps. It's not a 12-stepper book. It's a spiritualist book. They're in South America in the beginning. Anyway, somebody is screaming at the podcast going, this book. But that is the first thing, is to sit down and look at a plant and see its life and see its glow and to be able to acknowledge it and to commune with it. So praying to plants, essentially. So like,
yeah.
I think it's based on the nine enlightenments. Fuck, I'm going to go crazy thinking about this book.
Show notes again. I really think you should just fill these show notes because these are all really interesting references. But
Oh, no, I'm just going to Google if you don't mind while we talk because I'm going to go insane.
Yeah, Google it and I'm gonna reflect on what you said because I think that is the thing about it is that the thing that brought me to so-called commune with the plants, the thing that put me at my limits again, you know, exploring the limits where a frame of mind is incapable of carrying you through a certain situation because it's because it's wrong. You know, like you find out it doesn't have it in it. It can't successfully carry you through the situation because it's foundationally wrong. And you only find that out when you are placed in a situation where you are stretched to your limits and you are, you know, kind of flying by the seat of your pants like the Lorax. and like your capacities are so fully stretched that you will find the shortcomings and you will resort to things that you might not have resorted to before that turn out to work.
Because new situation requires new tactics, maybe?
Exactly. Yeah. You get to where you have no choice but to consider things that would never have occurred to you. At that point, you're actually open to the mind of God because you've been pushed to the point where your systems fail. If you're gonna, you know what I mean? If you're gonna succeed, it's because by grace, an idea has come to you or an openness has come to you. So I feel like that's a really good, I've never prayed to plants before. I really haven't. I really haven't like said, dear plants. Like, I mean, I wasn't that much about it, but I mean, I was like, okay, plants, really, I'm super, super sorry. I feel horrible about this. This is all my fault. If you die, I understand. I deserve it. But if you live, I promise I will do everything in me to reward you and thank you. And I live.
And so on your moment of happiness, did you look at them and again appreciate them in that moment and their new well-being?
Oh yeah.
Basically, I'm trying to lead a question. Like, did you pray through observance at that point in time? Does prayer have to be direct?
I think a little bit. I think it's. I won't get into it. Because I honestly just don't even have the emotional strength to get into it.
Okay.
But there is a reason why this was such a moment of grace that I did not deserve. The opportunity to bring back a life that I had failed to nurture. I felt so undeserving of that. I am undeserving of that opportunity. And having it was just a little grace.
I like a lot that you equate grace to happiness because I'm personally a big fan of the word grace. Hmm. It can be used in so many different ways, like approaching a situation with grace.
I love it too.
Receiving something through grace, you know, like all the different spaces that it fits. I think it's a really graceful word. I also like old pun jokes, but
I had it down.
I'm a dad. I earned it. So, but I like that you equate grace to happiness a lot because I think that is I think it answers some of your earlier questions that maybe you didn't get all the way around.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
Like the question of how do you help others be happy? Well, with grace, you know, behaving with grace and walking with grace.
Right.
Will help them be more allowed. So I'm going to run off on a me tangent real quickly. I was at the grocery store today because last time I went to the grocery store, they were at ice cream, and I have all the time in the world, so I needed more beer in my world. So, like, I literally bought beer and ice cream.
Beer and ice cream. The story about beer and ice cream.
How single am I? So anyway, I'm at the counter, and they've got the rotating grocery thing that you put your groceries on, right? You put a little divider between. The dividers make me a little nervous right now, but whatever. Put a divider on. I'm also the guy that puts the divider on behind mine to save the person behind me any trouble. So if there's not one in front of me, I throw one on either side.
Right.
The guy in front of me, straight up camouflage Trump 2020 hat, like blue stripe flag shirt, and not just that, but like
you thinking, I can tell you're one of my kind.
Tattered. I mean, at least he's wearing a mask, but like the tattered flag one, which is kind of really insulting, the whole tattered flag thing.
Oh, for sure.
And anyhow, long story to shorten a little bit, he finishes his thing and he's clearly buying professionally, like, because he's
okay,
like he's got a very specific list that he's following, and he like is price checking and all that, right?
In a brown shirt.
Well, I'm thinking maybe he's a fireman or something like that.
Okay,
he's got that build.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know, right? This is good.
Yes,
and it happened today. And the checker says, you know, have a nice day, and off he goes with his card, or starts to. He's loading up the last of his bags because no touching anything right now, right?
Okay.
And the checker, and again, I'm buying beer and ice cream. The checker picks up a bagged salad and goes, boop, as my, a bagged salad as my first item, boop. I'm like, that's his.
Oh, my gosh.
She goes, what? I was like, I honestly... I don't buy salad in bags, because that's a true story. I don't. I buy, like, a head of lettuce and some tomatoes and some and onions and a carrot. And, like I buy salad in six bags, not one.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's just not mine. And she's like, oh. And he's like, oh, it is mine. And he's like, well, because he's buying on a budget for some agency through a card, he can only use the card once per visit. So he can't really pay for it, right?
Uh-huh.
But she's already rung it up. Nobody knows what to do. She's like, I don't know what to do. He's like, I don't know what to do. I'm the guy who doesn't currently have a fucking income. I'm like, I just hand him a $5 bill. I was like, just here you go. Just handle it.
Wow.
Walking through the world of grace and making somebody else's day happier. When I got into my truck, he has that same tattered blue striped flag on the hood of his truck. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Grace. Big fan. My tangent got us totally off you. Apologize. I was very excited about my story, though.
Oh, that felt so nice. I was like visiting an island for a little while. Beautiful tropical island where people care about each other regardless of what clothes they're wearing or...
Yeah.
Or what? Skin or haircut or fucking whatever.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, I look a little less weird with the mask on than I do without.
Because you had the mask on, so you didn't get to see the point of
it. Yeah, you don't even see the mask. I did get the Guy Fawkes mask just so I can look like me.
Oh, no way!
But it's like, that is such a deep joke.
That's the mask you were wearing?
At work? No, I was wearing a flamed bandana. No.
Wow.
Like, yeah. I got varieties, but so anyhow, I don't know, back to it.
All right, so would you have another question for me?
I do have another question for you.
What is it?
Are you happy?
Are you serious? That's your question?
Yep, that's the next question.
Are you happy?
Are you happy?
At this moment, yes, because I'm talking to you.
Good. How about no more... grandiose thing. I appreciate the compliment. I don't want to step on it, but I'm also not here to take compliments. So,
well, I mean, I think that we've established in this conversation that happiness is like, it exists in a moment. When it exists, we can be enormously grateful that we got to have a moment of happiness. And in this moment, I'm enormously grateful. So how do you like that? Chew on that compliment.
I like it because it's a momentary appreciation of what exists. It is what we were just talking about with your plants. Or yeah. Your daughter's plants more directly. That taking a moment to acknowledge their well-being and the glory of that instant of time. And so does that equate to prayer?
Does it equate to prayer?
Yeah.
So I get like, in which way can you petition your God?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm bringing it back. And I wrote that down earlier.
I think that it needs to be as open as possible. Like when I say God, it can be difficult because I do come from a religious background, and then of course a lot of my friends still are religious and in the Christian bent. And so when I say God, it really does conjure a corresponding visual. And when I say God, I don't have a corresponding visual. And to me, that is the glory of God, is that there is no visual. I mean, think about what in your life you don't have a visual version of, a mental vision of. Seriously, what in your life do you not have a mental vision of?
Feelings and emotions, as we discussed earlier, where do they fucking exist?
True, but I mean, I think even when you think about emotions, like when you think about the feeling of happiness, like that comes with a whole package of, it's accompanied by experiences, you know, like that happiness is, it is appropriate in moments where you have maybe accepted your situation, where you have hope, whatever it is that makes you happy. But like, it's connected to moments in your life. But you're right. You don't have like a physical representation of happiness. And so it is, I think you do actually prove my point, my earlier point, that saying that emotions are a thing that you can't deny their existence. You just can't. I mean, like, who are you fooling? If you say that you...
Only yourself, honey. Only yourself.
Only yourself. Come on. You have the feelings. They are real. And you cannot place them in any location. And yeah, you can't give a visual to them. So yeah, I think that is true.
So on that level, you're happy in the moment, which... is pretty awesome.
Happy in the moment, and then trying to be okay with also not being happy.
With the rest of the moments?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like,
heaven forbid you look at a Twitter feed right now. Like,
I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, which I think has gotten actually more toxic. Facebook used to be less toxic.
Oh, right? See, Twitter has the advantage of what I'm seeing on Twitter right now is literal live feeds from activities on the planet right now.
Yeah.
So it's like the best news because it's actually what's happening.
Oh.
Boots on the ground, which is also terrifying. But yeah, like how to stay happy in a time like this. And in
why do you want to?
Because it feels good.
Oh, well, there's another hour right there. There's another hour. Yeah, because it feels good. Now there's a reason.
It's hard to deny. Happiness feels good.
It does feel good. You know what else feels good?
What's that?
Thinking you're not a racist.
Being pretty certain of it is a good feeling as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Other things that feel good are being able to say what you think without fear of reprisal. That feels good. Thinking that you have amendments that provide you with tangible rights that aren't going away anytime soon feels good.
Am I supposed to warn you that you just got your soapbox out? Or do you want to keep going? I mean, I'm good to keep going. I talked to a straight up black block person the other night.
I feel like we need a genius, and that they're among us. I want them to step up and be the geniuses that they are and help guide us through this.
On that, I would argue that the genius is us.
Maybe
we're at a point where maybe the best decisions need to come from a collective mind.
Maybe. And yes, to a degree. I think that it's not mutually exclusive. I think that...
there's a voice to every committee.
Yeah.
Is that where you're trying to go?
Funny Sherlock Holmes movie with... it's this guy's name.
Speaking of things that we didn't remember earlier, are you talking about Robert Downey Jr., first of all?
No, the Sherlock Holmes ones?
I don't remember who played it.
Will Ferrell. It's Will Ferrell and his son.
If it's Will Ferrell, I didn't watch it. I'm just not a fan. Yeah. Nothing against him. I'm just not a fan. In fact, he is on an amazing Twitter tirade right now. I'll give him all the props for that. But
really?
Not a fan. Like, he's losing his goddamn mind.
Now you definitely learned me to Twitter, because I actually wasn't a huge fan of his either. But this last movie of his, man, he might have won me over to where I might even like look back at his past work with a new eye. But there's this one scene that, again, my daughters, they love this, and we have so much fun watching this one over and over again, where they're so smart. Sherlock Holmes and his brother Mycroft are so smart that they can communicate without actual words. They just like look at each other and they know what they're saying. Well, Watson is smart enough to be able to hear what they're saying to each other without words, but not quite smart enough to actually respond. So funny. Ozzy, that's enough. Thank you.
You're bad guys.
Oh, my neighbors. With a dog, you know.
Bad guys. I have bad guys around my house. I'm really surprised we haven't heard any, because my dog's bark is more overwhelming. I mean, he's 80 pounds of pit bull sitting behind me.
Oh, like you.
He's a big sweetie. He's a big, dumb sweetie with tons of anxiety.
Oh, they're so sweet. So when Watson tries to communicate, he just goes, "Thoughts?" It's so funny. Okay. So why did I bring this up again?
I don't know where you were going with that one. I was trying to catch up, but...
Okay, well, what did you say right before? We were talking... Okay, let's backtrack.
Well, I mean, the last question was, are you happy? And then I, again, bumped into, can appreciation be a form of prayer? And then, frankly, I lose track.
Okay, well, dang.
I told a really long story somewhere in there.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let me see if I can figure out. Pick up the.
How about I just ask you the last question? We just.
Okay.
Don't right. burn our brains anymore.
Sounds good. Yeah.
You got Will Ferrell, and the book we couldn't remember was Celestine Prophecy. So I got that. And so now we can move along.
I've read that book.
Yeah. That's the one with the communing with plants. It's the first.
No, we are having a conversation though here. We were talking about how I was saying how a leader needs to step. I hope.
Oh, okay. There needs to be a. Okay.
I hope that a leader would step up, and that leader would be able to, and you said that maybe at this point the leader is all of us and all of our collective mind. Okay. Granted, I think both of those things are true. I think that the leader serves the purpose of, grant me that not every single person's train of thought is entirely, led by logical, applied, critical thinking and may have some flaws that lead them to erroneous beliefs about how to solve problems.
It's a lot of words to find and give some people some forgiveness, but I am on board with it.
Oh, no, it's not the forgiveness. It's the criticism, to be critical of their outcomes or be critical of a person's position, that a person with all the good intentions in the world, you know, we talked about this earlier, the path to
right.
hell is paved with good intentions. All the good intentions in the world are often going to lead you to an erroneous conclusion simply because, you know, you're led by goodwill and flowers and cute puppies and.
Well, and whatever the place you come from is, you know, whatever your background and education experiences are. And that may be a place that doesn't afford you self-exploration and a desire to have a better understanding of the world around you. Maybe that doesn't.
The hive mind that you're talking about, I think is valuable. And that's why I brought in Sherlock. Okay. So the hive mind is that ability to communicate sort of without words, like where we are melding our minds in a way in some different realm. And while that can yield incredible results, as demonstrated by Sherlock and his brother Mycroft, it can also yield incredible amounts of nebulous confusion, as witnessed when Watson tries to chime in with slots. And so while it's great to have that hive mind and it transcends in a way that a singular mind couldn't transcend, because it brings us all along. Like maybe I could say it prepares us for receptivity. Maybe I could say that. And then a leader comes along and actually hones all of those good intentions to workable solutions. And I feel like where we are right now is we're stuck in an ideological battlefield where we're not demanding real solutions from anybody, as long as we think that their ideology is correct and their intentions are correct.
That is definitely something to ponder in the world we're in right now. I would agree that the desires for change that are being expressed through people showing up every single night.
These are the conditions that allow for a leader to emerge historically.
Yeah.
These are the conditions that give power to the person with focused thinking who has the ability to reach out and touch on a level of values, to connect with the broad spectrum on a level of values. I think that the moment is ripe. And then the question in my mind is, do those leaders emerge?
Well, okay. So A, we've fallen into a pretty deep rabbit hole and I'm totally into going here. We were doing so well at dodging them. But I don't know that this is the time that an Angela Davis, who has been very outspoken and has decades of knowing how to be outspoken on what's going on right now, is necessarily what we need. I think that there is a group speak that needs to be happening that comes kind of like a wave and washes out the people. I don't do it myself, but I'm kind of a fan of like doxing Nazi flag guy on his truck driving through town, like taking the plates, finding out who he is, exposing him, and that wave of group speak that does that. So it's not just one individual doing it. It's the voice of everyone changing. And I kind of lean to that side. Like, again, We have gone down a very deep rabbit hole.
We have. And this is more like a 2-hour side conversation, really, or three, or like.
Or it may be a 3-bottle of wine conversation, frankly. Like, I don't know how you measure them, but.
I'm so glad we're having, you and I are having this conversation right now. I don't know how many people will actually ever listen to it. It's not even the point. You and I, regardless of whatever else ever comes of this conversation, you and I are having a conversation about the moment and about what is needed. And I think that we can't, the one thing I would say that is just flat out a losing strategy is to fucking go with the flow.
Well, and having the conversation means you don't go with the flow. I think the conversation is the needed first step all the way around the board. It is the needed first step.
Yeah.
Maybe we can figure out where we all are as individuals. And maybe we can figure out how to be that.
If we could commit to the conversation. You know, I told you before we had this call that I was spending all this time trying to craft this Facebook message that I never ended up sending. And I was going to see if I could ask you for some help on.
Yeah.
And part of that message, you know, was this. I feel like we need to find a way forward. I feel like we're kind of at a stalemate, and the moment is really, really ripe for forward momentum. And people who prefer chaos over solutions are going to be just fine with holding us in this holding pattern and losing us our moment of an edge. Because I do think that we actually have an edge right now over the federal government, because Trump's hand is so fucking, like, he might as well have just spread his cards on the table and been like, here's what I'm playing at.
If he's good at nothing, he's good at obfuscation. He's good at, look at what this hand is doing, so you forget what this one is doing. Like, he's a pickpocket of your mind and your ideals, and he just keeps the focus off the current thing. So if he's good at anything, he's good at exactly what he's done and exactly what people expected of it.
And where we lose
is stepping off my soapbox.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Save me from my soapbox earlier. Where we lose is where we say we've been outsmarted by an idiot.
We've been outsmarted by a pickpocket.
Okay. If that's really our defense of our loss, is that we weren't smart enough to see the fucking cards laid on the table and still figure out how to play our fucking hand, that's how we lost, and we're going to blame the moron who laid his cards on the table? No, I feel like the moment is right. And a person who knows the full scope, they know the right, they know the left, they know the minefields, they know the game, they know the history, they know what's demanded of this moment, and they have it within them to take that on as their mantle and have that bold, unimaginable faith in themselves that they are called upon to lead humanity through the darkest of our moments. That's a special person, and I don't think it's impossible that that person exists today. And I think where the group, the shared mental, what did you call it? The
collective, just
the collective,
yeah.
The collective mind.
Yeah.
I think where the collective mind has its power, it's just not in articulating a message.
Agreed.
No, the collective is not good at articulating a clear path forward. The collective mind is really good at expressing a general strong distaste for one thing and embrace of another. That's as far as we had.
So this brings us back to something I said, and we were both pretty heated at the moment, so it was easy to pass over. But yeah, never ever.
I'm so cool.
Was that it, like a committee doesn't actually accomplish something until it has a voice for the committee. There is a voice on the jury, you know, the head juror or whatever they call it. There is a speaker of the house. There's that person for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like maybe you're arguing that we need that person to bring the collective mind together.
Or those people. I think there's,
well,
more than one of those people, just like we had Malcolm. And
when we get off, I'm going to give you a couple recommendations.
Okay, good.
Okay. But yeah. Let's move you through the last question just to bring it back up to a few other things. Yeah. And then, like I said, I got more time if you do. Last question is, what makes you happy?
What makes me happy? Well, good. That's a good kind of conclusive sort of question after the exploration of happiness. I mean, hope definitely makes me happy. And so I do have to gaze upon hope with this sort of suspect eye, because I know that it makes me happy, and therefore I am susceptible to maybe not holding it to such rigid standards as another feeling or another belief. So I don't know if this leader will emerge, for example, or these leaders. I don't know if they will emerge. I feel like they're there. I feel like I even know who some of them are.
people who already have voices. Yeah.
Yeah. People who could really just embrace this moment and say, yeah, no, this is my time. This is where I need to just, you know, take that leap of faith and step out into the unknown territory and trust that when I place my weight on my front foot, I will encounter some sort of counter force and I will still be standing. That level of hope makes me happy. I'm hopeful that somebody like that would come along, and the fact that hope makes me happy makes me even happier in itself, because if hope makes me happy, then it's likely that hope makes other people happy. You told me earlier it makes you happy.
Yep.
And so maybe it makes this future leader happy enough that it's an incentive enough to suspend doubt.
You know, suspend doubt, is that full stop, or is it suspend doubt and be happy being the voice that is needed, or is it like just pushing a little bit?
Well, I mean, suspend doubt in that it's hard for all of us to, you know, we talked about, I brought up the second person. It's hard for every single last stinking one of us to imagine that we could be that second person. We almost get into a self-berating mode at even indulging the possibility, even indulging as a question that we could be that second person. Like, how arrogant of us, how foolish. We're so faulty. We're so flawed. We're so weak. How could we be that second person? Impossible. Don't be foolish. That's the kind of doubt that I think a leader has to suspend. And that's powerful doubt. That's a serious leap of faith. I could be this. Not just my best self, but the leader of nation. Well, I mean,
it could be argued that that's a mental health question too. I mean, because if you come out saying you're the new Jesus, just to use one, or the next prophet, you know, whatever. Like if you come out saying that, you're a crazy person on the street corner, and we're full up with those right now.
Right. that is literally the boogeyman hiding in the closet of anyone who wants to step forth and actually matter. That is the boogeyman. I'm deluded. I'm the man on the corner with the Jesus Saves placard. Mm-hmm.
Questioning your sanity is the only way that you stay sane, arguably. Psychologists will agree. I'm going to ask you one more time what makes you happy, and then I'm going to let you off the hook and let you speak freely.
Okay. Well, no, I think I did answer it, though. I think I did. I told you that hope makes me happy, okay. Which is why I am... I find it just suspect. Like, I just have to be suspect. I feel like that's the way that I have figured out to safeguard myself a little bit from delusion, is to be extra critical of the things that make me feel good. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And I don't know how to communicate that to people, because I kind of want to say that. Like, I meet a lot of people, like, online, especially, you know, I'm in a lot of groups and stuff, and I try to have these conversations with people. You're making me really want to smoke a cigarette, so I went and got my, like...
It's my living room, so I can chain smoke, you know? I'm...
I'm gonna have to go find out.
I heard somebody else do that to somebody on a podcast recently, and I now feel badly for doing the same thing.
Oh, really? Making someone want to smoke?
Yeah, I sit there and chain smoke in front of you, and lo and behold, you bring out the "I'm gonna have one a week" cigarette pack kind of person.
You know? Oh no, I'm not. I've never had an addiction problem. Thank goodness. Oh, that's a blessing right there. I've never had an addiction problem with cigarettes at all. Like, I can have one every 6 months, and that's, like, so much more than enough, because it does kind of, like, it's fun, but it also kind of makes you feel kind of,
But maybe it gives you a moment of happiness.
But it gives you a moment, yeah, right? I mean, you only live once.
Right. On that, I'm going to press stop. I'm going to thank you for doing this with me again before I do that. Thank you again for doing this.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Hey, folks. Instead of the normal outro music this week, you get another song by Elise. It is one of her newer songs called Hiding All the Way. I'll throw a link to her website in the show notes so you can go check her out some more. It is super easy, though. It is EliseTyler.com, so that shouldn't be too confusing for anyone. But enjoy the music now that you've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for listening.
A child, you run off and hide. You been hiding around the corner, but we watched you hide there. You been hiding around the corner, hiding all the way. I think it's time you knew. Can't hide a look from across the room. I think it's time you heard. Can't hush every word. No, you can't hush every word. No, you can't hush every word. Well, I know you won't hear. You cut off your ears, and I know that your armor has convinced you. You are strong. You are. Nothing can stop you but the truth. So you craft a special knife.
forge it in your own fire. A special magic knife, your final evidence. Now you chop it up for supper and with every bite. The fantasy you is more realized. Hide, just like a drone, controlled by your own crazy fantasy world that we watched you build. You've been hiding. Set down your fork, set down your knife. We are not they, stand in your way. Now that you know, see everything. Just like a child, you run off and hide. You've been